Morning, everyone.
Good morning, David.
Everyone awake and ready? Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. Beloved Jesus Christ. Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. This is a recent study released about healing prayer, sent to me by Tom Knott from Hornby Island. He and I have interesting scientific discussions about things, and he thought I'd find this interesting, and I thought you might as well. Findings reported today, August 5th, from a new international study of healing prayer suggest that prayer for another person's healing, it just might help, especially if one is praying physically near the person being prayed for. Candy Gunther Brown, an associate professor in the Department of Religious Studies at Indiana University Bloomington, led the study of proximal intercessory prayer for healing. The study, titled "The Study of the Therapeutic Effects of Proximal Intercessory Prayer on Auditory and Visual Impairments in Rural Mozambique," measured surprising improvements in vision and hearing in economically disadvantaged areas where eyeglasses and hearing aids are not readily available. We chose to investigate proximal prayer because that's how a lot of prayer for healing is actually practiced by Pentecostal and charismatic Christians around the world, Brown said. These constitute the fastest-growing Christian subgroups globally. With some 500 million adherents, they are among those most likely to pray expectantly for healing. Brown and her colleagues carried out the study as part of a larger research program on cultural significance and experience of spiritual healing practices. Although Pentecostals often pray for their own healing and request distant prayer, intercessory prayer, they consider proximal prayer to be particularly efficacious and emphasize the importance of physical proximity and human touch in praying effectively for healing. When people feel that they have a serious need for healing, they are willing to try almost anything, Brown said. If they feel that a particular religious or spiritual practice healed them, they are much more likely to become an adherent. This phenomenon, more than any other, accounts for the growth of these Christian subgroups globally. Brown and her colleagues studied the activity of healing groups, Iris Ministry, and Global Awakening in Mozambique and Brazil because of their reputation of hotspots of specialized prayer for those with hearing and vision impairments. The researchers used an audiometer and vision charts to evaluate 15 rural Mozambican subjects who reported impaired hearing and 11 who reported impaired vision, both before and after the subjects received proximal intercessory prayer. The study focused on hearing and vision because it was possible to measure them with hearing machines and vision charts, allowing a more direct measure of improvement than simply asking people whether they feel better. Subjects exhibited improved hearing and vision that were statistically significant after the prayer was administered. Two subjects with impaired hearing reduced the threshold at which they could detect sound by 50 decibels. Three subjects had their tested vision improve from 2400 or worse to 20/80 or better. These improvements are much larger than those typically found in suggestion and hypnosis studies. Brown recounted that one subject, an elderly Mozambican woman named Miriam, initially reported that she could not see a person's hand with two upraised fingers from a distance of 1 foot. A healing practitioner put her hand on Miriam's eyes, hugged her, and prayed for less than a minute. Then the person held 5 fingers in front of Miriam, who was able to count them and even read the 20 by 125 line on the vision chart. The study focuses on clinical effects of prayer and does not attempt to explain the mechanisms by which the improvements occurred. So it goes on from there, but I thought you would find that interesting. And another confirmation of what many of us know already, that prayer works. Like to read from a book given to me by Swami Satchidananda. It was his copy of Divine Life by Swami Ramdas. This is the introduction, a biographical sketch. Sri Swami Ramdas, who was known in his pre-sannyas life as Vital Roy, was born at Hosdurg, Kanangad, North Kerala, on the Thursday, the 10th April, 1884. It was the day of the full moon, and it happened to be Hanuman Jayanti, i.e. the birthday of Hanuman, the greatest devotee of Sri Ram. This happy synchronization seemed to augur very well for the great future of the child born that day to Srimata Lalita Bai and Sri Balakrishna Rao. The one remarkable thing about him, the people who saw him then observed, was the extraordinary luster of his eyes. Vital was not overfond of school or books, and so he came in for a large measure of his teacher's wrath. He often played truant, but in vain did he hide himself in the bathroom or in the loft of a cow pen, for his ubiquitous teacher was well aware of his favorite haunts of his recalcitrant pupil. His high school career, too, was marked by extreme indifference to studies and supreme dislike of textbooks. Although he refused to be cramped by the school curriculum, he became a voracious reader and read all the books of general interest he could lay his hands upon. His taste for literature enabled him to acquire, even at so early an age, a remarkable facility in his English style. His intelligence, even as a student, was of a high order. Whatever he read once, he made his own. He was even then a good conversationalist, and had inherited from his father an unequaled sense of wit and humor. He would raise roars of laughter with his listeners by the unique manner in which he related incidents of his own life or observations. The humor always lay more in the narrative of the event than in the event itself, and he knew it. Whatever be the situation he was placed in for the time being, it was the lighter side of it rather than the serious one that appealed to his keen sense of comic and the ludicrous in life. As could be expected, Vital lagged behind in his studies, with the result that he could not get through the matriculation examination. He then joined the School of Arts and took a course in drawing and engraving. Though his progress here was remarkable, as the future prospects that led this course held out were none too bright, he discontinued the course and joined the Victoria Jubilee Technical Institute of Bombay and took up textile engineering course. At the end of the 3 years course at the VJT Institute, Vital Rao received his diploma in textile manufacture. When he is employed as a spinning master in the cotton mill at Gulbarga, he was married to Rukmabai in the year 1908, and a daughter, Rumabai, was born to him in 1913. After a checkered career of several years, he finally came down to Mangalore in 1917 and joined his father-in-law in his business. It went against his grain to stoop to any of the tricks of the trade. Inevitably, this led to a clash with his father-in-law, and he soon severed his connection with the business and started his own business in dyeing fabrics and printing saris. But he was too honest to be a businessman, and the final financial condition of the business was drifting from bad to worse. His domestic life were also none too happy. Throughout his life in service, brief periods of employment were followed by longer periods of unemployment and idleness. Before he had hardly settled down at one place, depending on the appointment he had secured, circumstances so seemed to work up that he lost the post for no fault of his own, and he had once again to embark on the quest of securing some fresh means of livelihood. Thus, for him, continued domestic felicity was not to be, and the sweet pleasures of a home of his own were denied to him. Slowly and imperceptibly, external circumstances were helping Vital Rose's spirit of dispassion gain an added strength and impetus. Every evening he spent an hour at the house of his brother, Sitaramro, whose children would be engaged in bhajan before the image of Sri Krishna. During the bhajan, Vital Rao would lose himself in a blissful state of self-forgetfulness. It was at this time that Vital Rao started chanting the Lord's name, Ram, and the repetition of the name brought him great mental peace and joy. He kept up a ceaseless flow of the blessed name on his tongue, and its humming would automatically issue from his lips even when he is at work or walking in the streets. He gave up the night meal and other petty comforts of the body. His wife got thoroughly frightened at the strange turn her husband's life was rapidly taking now. No persuasion, appeal, and protest, either from her or from his child, could induce him to alter the course he was now made to follow. Because he felt very strongly that he was set upon this path by that highest power which he was struggling to attain and realize. At this stage, his father came to him one day and gave him initiation into the holy mantra, Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, assuring him at the same time that if he repeated the mantra constantly, he would be blessed with the eternal happiness. This was a great moment in the life of Vital Rao. His progress was quicker, and so was his detachment from the world. He was preparing himself for the final plunge. Very soon, in December 1922, he bade goodbye to his worldly life and left Mangalore. 2 days later, he reached Srinagam. There, after a bath in the holy Kaveri, he changed his clothes to ochre, took the vows of sannyas, and assumed the name Ramdas, servant of Ram, as commanded by his master, Ram. Shortly afterwards, he was standing in front of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi, praying for grace. Bhagavan nodded his head as if to say that he had showered his grace on his earnest aspirant. Now the new Swami Ramdas' whole body trembled with emotion. On leaving the Maharshi, he went to a cave in the Arunachala hill and spent 20 days in constant chanting of Ramnam, taking only a little rice which he himself cooked. At the end of this period, he was blessed with a new vision. He saw his beloved Ram everywhere. In that ecstasy, he embraced anything and anybody he saw. He was literally God-mad. In that condition, he traveled all over India, visiting holy shrines and mahatmas. A year later, his wife and daughter, coming to know that he was staying in an ashram of Sri Siddharuddha Swami at Hubli, then went there and, with permission of Sri Siddharuddha Swami, took him back to Mangalore. But Swami Ramdas, instead of accompanying the mother and daughter to their house, went straight to the Panch Pandava cave in Kadri. He stayed there for over 3 months. The stay was very significant in that it afforded Swami Ramdas an opportunity for undisturbed meditation and enabled him to get higher experiences. According to him, he first entered the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi while he is in the Panch Pandava cave. Again, his wanderings took him many times to all parts of India, and he had a large number of admirers and followers. Vivid descriptions of his itinerary as a mendicant has been written down by him in his own lucid style and published in Quest of God and in the Vision of God. After a few years wandering, Swami Ram Dass came to Kasaragod and started a small ashram. It is here that Mother Krishnabai first came into contact with him, and after a couple of years chose to dedicate her entire life to his service and mission. It was God's will that Swami Ram Dass was not to continue in that little ashram long. God prompted some miscreants to create trouble, which made Swami Ram Dass and Mother Krishnabai, submitting to his will, leave the ashram for good. Soon after, Anandashram in Kanangad came up, and the opening ceremony of it was done on 15th May 1931. Though it was started in a very humble way, the ashram has considerably expanded over the years. Anandashram has been a very powerful spiritual beacon, and thousands of ardent devotees have been visiting it every year, carrying home with them the torch of light, love, and service lit at the feet of the great master. Swami Ram Dass, whom his devotees and followers lovingly call Papa, was bubbling with joy always as a result of his realization of God in all his aspects and the consequent opening of the floodgates of joy in his heart. He reached the heights of realization only by taking to the chanting of the mantra, Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om was added by him after he got initiation of the mantra. This constant chanting of the mantra enabled him to remember and feel the presence of God within him and everywhere about him, and to realize that the entire universe was the form of God. This naturally brought him to the absolute state of surrender, i.e., accepting that whatever happened, happened by the will of God, and he finally realized his oneness with the Supreme Being. He therefore taught everybody who sought advice from him to take the chanting of God's name constantly and submit to his will in all matters. This practice, he assured, would bring them eternal happiness. And they had no reason to doubt the authenticity of this statement, because he himself was a living example of what spiritual heights Ram Nam could take an aspirant to. Swami Ram Dass and Mother Krishnabai visited many places in India at the invitation of a devotee every year from 1949 to 1957. Wherever he went, bhajan with the chanting of God's name was the main feature. He was not inclined to give long lectures, though he gave short talks and answered any number of questions that were put to him on spiritual subjects. In 1954, he undertook a tour around the world where many friends from Europe, European countries, America, Japan, Malay, Singapore, and Ceylon, had the rare opportunity of meeting him and conversing with him. He wrote many books in English and started in 1933 a monthly called The Vision to carry his message of universal love and service based on cosmic vision. The universality and largeness of his outlook can be seen from one of his frequent utterances quoted below. Quote, Ram Dass does not belong to any particular creed. He firmly believes that all creeds, faiths, and religions are different paths which ultimately converge at the same goal. The very sight of a Mohammedan reminds him of Mohammed, and a Christian, Jesus Christ, and of a Hindu, Ram, Krishna, or Shiva, and of a Buddhist, Buddha, of a Parsi, Zoroaster. All the great teachers of the world are from one God, the first eternal cause of all existence, whether it be in the Gita, or the Bible, or the Koran, or the Zendavesta. We find the same note insistently ringing, vis-a-vis self-surrender is the supreme way to liberation or salvation. Swami Ram Dass entered Mahasamadhi on 25th July 1963 at the age of 79. Though not present in flesh, he continues to inspire and guide his spiritual children and earnest aspirants wherever they are, and his work divine goes on. This coming Saturday, we celebrate the Mahasamadhi anniversary of Papa Ram Dass. And because of Mother We are all recipients of the grace of Papa. We are all influenced by his teachings and his wonderful personality. Papa is indeed unique in his explanation and description of the universal vision of Ram, or the infinite spirit that pervades all creation. It is a tremendous vision, really, to be able to apprehend that God exists within every part of creation. Now, for the human mind, this defies logic, it defies our experience. We think of God and know God as to be the supreme attribute of all goodness, all love, all joy. And yet, our experience in this world does not reflect all goodness, all love, all joy. We take many knocks in this life, and as described here, Papa's life was not a happy one in his pre-Sannyas life. And if you read the descriptions, the prayers of Papa after writing In Quest of God, you'll see there's such yearning for God, such a desire to be lifted up into God's presence and to realize this universal vision that he ascertained was the height and the pinnacle of human experience. We take a humble view when we compare our own lives to the greatness of such a saint. When Swami Satchidananda first read about Papa's life and his mission, he read the words from Papa that everything happens by the will of God. And he had an interesting reaction to this because Swami Satchidananda's life had not been easy either. He had suffered bouts of depression. He had had thoughts of taking his own life. And it was a difficult time for him. He had taken leave from the military by which he was employed at the time because he was in such a distraught state. And so it didn't come easy to him, but he thought to himself, it would take a very great man, a very great soul, to be able to say those words. But he must have heard the ring of authenticity within those words because he didn't discount them. He didn't just see them as somebody's lunatic ravings, but he saw in them the truth. And so he thought, I must meet this man, and immediately embarked to go and see Swami Ramdas. And so we are also the great beneficiaries of Swami Satchidananda, because it was through that impulse to go see Papa that he became an adherent to Papa, and that we have also received the grace of the divine consciousness through Swami Satchidananda. These are tremendous souls and tremendous beings. And it's interesting to think that because one small man, he is small in the sense of his stature, really decided to pursue this universal vision. He left without money, without any name or fame to himself. His wife and his daughter were extremely upset that he picked up and left, but he felt that it was God's will. So he left with absolutely nothing. And yet his vibration, his words, his spirit continue to reverberate throughout this world. It continues to change the minds, the hearts, the lives of devotees everywhere. And it's a tremendous thing when you think about it. Just one individual changing so many. Master used to say, change yourself and you will change thousands. And Papa is certainly the result of that. When Mother first came to know of Papa, she must have felt that there was something there. Bob Raymer from the Midwest was a disciple of Master's. He met Papa. He had an interesting meeting with him. He had heard about Papa from somebody up the chain. And so he invited Papa to come and speak to his Rotary group. And he thought that he would say some nice spiritual words and that everybody would have a nice time of it. Well, when Papa got there, he stood in front of this group of businessmen and spoke for a short amount of time. But he spoke about the evils of this world, how business can corrupt you and money is a problem and all the rest of it, and how we have to be sure to lead a good life. Well, the good life was all right, but the rest of it, this seeming harangue against the world, was not something Bob thought that he would bring to this group of businessmen. And he was horrified. He thought, oh my God, what will all these men think of me? Sitting here, they're all businessmen, they're all involved in the world, and they're going to think, what's wrong with this Bob Raymer that he invited this man to come and speak to us? And so he left after the meeting, Bob did, and he drove around and around because he was certain by the time he got back to his office, he would have numerous calls, being people being angry with him, upset with him for inviting this great soul to come and talk to them. And so finally he took his courage in his hand and he arrived back at his office. And he found there not the harangues that he was so afraid of, but people who thanked him by phone messages saying how wonderful it was that this Swami had come to speak with them and how much they'd received from it. And it must have been a real shocker for him, considering how upset he was before that. But Bob called Mother, and they knew each other well, and said that there's this tremendous soul, and perhaps she would like to have him come and speak to her meditation group in Seattle. And it was a wonderful meeting. So Mother took him up on it. And I'll read here from The World is God. It's Papa's own description of meeting Mother, and it's entitled Transmission of Spiritual Power. Among the visitors we had in Seattle, Ram Dass may make particular mention of two, Yogacharya Mildred Hamilton and Mr. Robert Carr. Reverend Ralph B. Hamilton and his wife, Yogacharya Mildred Hamilton, are ardent disciples of Swami Yogananda. Mildred Hamilton would be in a state of divine inebriation when she thought of God, when the thought of God came into her mind. She is also a great lover of saints. She came one early morning before any other friends arrived to meet Ram Dass. She said that in Ram Dass' presence, she felt elevated into divine consciousness. She squatted on the carpet and with eyes closed remained for about 10 minutes absolutely still, her face lit up with a spiritual glow. Next evening, Ram Dass was taken to their house to meet their friends, devotees of Swami Yogananda. The meeting lasted for an hour. Here, Ram Dass was asked to speak a few words to the friends. Ram Dass addressed the gathering on the greatness of saints and the ways in which they influence spiritual aspirants who seek their help. In the course of his speech, Ram Dass said, "It is said that saints transmit their powers in three ways, by thought, sight, and touch. When a saint thinks of a person, even though he is far away, that person is illumined. A saint looks at a person, and he feels by the saint's grace that his entire being is shaken from its foundation, and he finds himself transformed from that moment. A new consciousness dawns in him by the saint's very look. If a saint places his hand on the head of an aspirant, that instant the aspirant will feel tremendous change taking place in him." Hearing these words, Mildred Hamilton requested Ram Dass, after he closed the speech, to touch the head of everyone present there and transmit his grace to them in that way. Ram Dass agreed to do so, saying, "Yes, Ram Dass has committed himself." The devotees present then bowed before Ram Dass one by one, and he placed his hand on their heads. After this was done, Ram Dass told Mildred Hamilton, "You have got here all your fragrant flowers together. Are you all happy now? You must, of course, feel happy. With her characteristic humility, she replied, "When God himself has come to us, why should we not feel happy?" At this, Ram Dass remarked, "God has come to see God." It was indeed a very blissful gathering. This is a significant thing the Papa said, because Mother in vision before that had been praying deeply to God. And in a vision that she had, a revelation from God, he said, "I will come to see you face to face." And when Papa said, "God has come to see God," she felt a bolt of electricity, spiritual vibrancy go through her as a confirmation of the vision that she had had sometime before Papa had come. And so Mother felt the calling, and she went to India. And she said a strange thing. It may sound strange to us. She said that Papa had the courage to hurt her, in a sense, to put her through the mystical crucifixion. It was what was required. Mother described as she sat before Papa, and there were 7 sannyasis visiting there that day. I believe it was 7. And then Papa let out a breath over the top of her head, it felt to her. And it started her into these kundalini experiences. Mother had experienced nirvikalpa samadhi before that. But she knew that there was more, because in nirvikalpa samadhi, you still go in and out of your oneness with God. And she wanted to become perfectly established in God consciousness. She had come to India for that reason. She said that so oftentimes when she met with her own master, she brought to him the problems of day-to-day living and illnesses and other difficulties that she or others that were around her were going through. And she had felt, I think, that she had missed the full potentiality that Master represented for her, that she had not gotten the fullest experience from him. Recognizing that Papa embodied the same God consciousness that her own Master did, she came to India to get that fullest experience. And she came with such tremendous desire. There is nothing left behind for her. She had sold her home, all the possessions that they had, in order to make that trip to India. She and her husband were in their mid-50s. Most people are thinking about retirement, their nest egg. What are they going to live on as they get into their older age? She had no thoughts of such things. She only wanted God realization. And soon after arriving there, Papa was visiting with them, and he just got up to adjust himself slightly. And she said with a start, "Papa, don't go." And he said, no, Ram Dass is not going. He's just adjusting himself. And he sat back down. That was Mother's really keen desire to have that experience with Papa. She was bound and determined not to let an ounce of it slip by, as she felt that perhaps she had with her own master. Mother always said that Master Paramahansa Yogananda was her guru. That never changed. But that she was the product of 2 completely realized, God-realized beings, both Master and Papa Ram Dass. There's no denying that Papa played a tremendous role. It is interesting because Papa always identified his own father as his guru. And yet it is clear that Ramana Maharshi played an important role in his own ascent into the universal vision. That look that Ramana Maharshi gave him changed him. By contrast, we know of a Swami who came to Ramana Maharshi and sat with him for over 20 days, hoping to get a glance from the great soul so that he too might get a transformative experience. And not once did the master look at him. But when Papa came, he'd been chanting constantly. He had been roaming without any coin, without any money whatsoever. Only one change of clothing. He'd thrown his entire lot in with God. And Swami Satchidananda said that when Mother asked whether she would get her complete realization, and Papa asked her whether she had come with the same intensity as he had when he went to Ramana Maharshi. And then Papa said, yes, you must have. You've come from such a great distance with such ardency that to Swami Satchidananda's knowledge, that was the only time, and many had asked whether they would get their complete realization of Papa, but that was the only time that Papa said yes to any devotee who came to them. Our mother was certainly a special, special soul, and she received the special grace, the special attention and love of both Papa and Mother Krishnabai. These are tremendous beings, all of them, because both Papa and Master and Mother were all special incarnations. Mother said that because we were just coming out of the Kali Yuga, and this was a particularly dark Kali Yuga, because both in the smaller cycle and the larger cycle, we were at the apex of the furthest away from the light, and that the tremendous destructive dark forces that embodied the Kali Yuga were still very much with the world as it made a transition into the Dwapara Yuga, or the electrical age. And that is why there were many special great souls that were incarnating in the first part of that century. And certainly we know many of them. We know Master. We know Papa. We know Mother. We know Anandamoyi Ma and others who came to help change the destiny so that this world need not go through more dark wars. Now, it doesn't mean that it's a complete end of things, but Papa guaranteed that there would be no more World War III, as many were predicting at the time, a nuclear holocaust. And it's interesting to note that soon after the crisis that happened during President Kennedy's tenure, in which we came very close to an all-out nuclear war, that it was very soon after that that Papa left the body. And I have thought at times that perhaps that was the pinnacle of grace of Papa's life, that not only had he come to this world to help lift souls up into the highest states of realization, but he had also come to help avert some great tragedy. Mother was also very interested in the Cold War. And so it was during the time that she was going through such intense suffering towards the end of her life that things finally broke. People were predicting that the Soviet Union would maintain its power and an attempt for dominance in this world for many, many years to come, and that we had to make peace with it, but that Mother was intent that people should enjoy freedom. And it was during that time that it seemed like the spell was broken, and that the more severe aspects of the expansion communist type government was broken. And so these great masters come for both personal reasons that are connected with individuals, but they also influence the world events. And we are all the great beneficiaries of that. We are such great beneficiaries of Papa. We love his humor. We love his joy. We love his love. And yet Mother said that on a one-to-one basis, that he was very impersonal. You could never get anything of the personal from him. In fact, his own references to himself through third person indicates that. And that through the tremendous suffering that she went through as she went through the mystical crucifixion, that she yearned to get some affirmation on a human level. But Papa would raise his hand to her and say, why do you need it? He was putting her on her own two feet, you see. And sometimes the guru does this. Sometimes the guru brings you in close and gives you such great love and understanding. Mother did that for us all. But sometimes they stand back. They want us to stand on our own two feet. They want us to become manifestations of the Supreme Light. The Guru comes in many guises and many types of relationships. For some, the Guru is primarily friend, almost family member. Perhaps they are a family member, and we interact with them on that level. For others, the Guru comes as a teacher who comes to give us something, some teachings, some gems, some jewels that we can take away, and then we are responsible whether we employ them or not. For others, the Guru is the source of God consciousness and has come like a great flame to awaken the sparks within our own consciousness. And those who approach the Guru from that standpoint get the fullest benefit. The Guru has no expectation for anyone who comes to them. They see them as embodiments of God. They see them as fully in the grip of God consciousness, even as they themselves are. But God sets up for them to have a role. And in that role, they become friend, they become teacher, they become the source of grace and light, depending on the individual who comes to them. Now, no close proximity is needed in order for that to happen. We read about this study that was done with proximity prayer, but that is not required within spirit. Certainly, it can open the receptivity of the individual on the receiving end, and perhaps it raises the consciousness higher of the one who is the conduit for spiritual power. But I can tell you through my own experience that distance is not an obstacle, not at all. As you know, over these last months, God has been putting me through some tremendous experiences. And through that time, I would, from time to time, tears would just begin to emit from the eyes. And I felt the grief of someone who was going through a great loss. And when somebody then called, a devotee called, and said that their brother had died, and that they had been going through a great deal of grief around that, but also understanding and growth, I saw there that this was the source that was behind the tears that kept coming down. And God gives it to me this way. He gives it to me to share in your experience, all the experiences, those of who follow along on this path, and then in the world at large. And it's a fascinating thing. I have longed to tell you more about these inner experiences so that you would know of them, but God keeps me mum on them. But every once in a while, He lets me take something out of the bag and show it and relate it. But sometimes I feel as small as a molecule, as small as an atom. And the world and the universe is vast and filled with divine light and splendor. And other times this world, even the universe itself, feels as small as a tiny little atom itself. And I feel vast within that. And I see there the light that is permeating all through this creation. When you see that it is God, through His evolutionary power, that is operating through every soul, and they taking them from exactly where they're at in the moment, and taking them on a tremendous journey of realization. Now some, out of their fear and their desire nature, are working out a karma because their ego takes hold, and it takes them in many diverse directions. And sometimes a great sense of sadness comes over me because I feel that there is a lost opportunity when that one had been seeking the light. But fear and desire nature take over during that time. Mother described herself like a fisherman. She would hook the fish, and the fish would struggle and fight with her. She was once a fisherman. She wore the wading boots and everything else and would go out and cast her line. And then the fish would begin to run, and at that time the fisherman learns to let the line go. And the fish swims and swims and swims, and I'm sure at that time the fish thinks that it's free. Free of the hook, free of everything, all restraints and responsibilities. But the guru has them hooked, and she would let them go out so far, and then she would begin to reel them in. And then they would take off and they'd go on another run. And you let the line go and go and go, and then she would begin to reel them back in. And gradually, 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 perhaps over many, many lifetimes, gradually she reels that fish in, and at the very last they jump into the boat happily, ready to surrender themselves totally and completely. The guru has their own realization. They are not in need of anything in the sense of anybody doing something for them, because they have everything that God has given to them, and God gives to them through all different sources. But God provides for that one. All the guru wants is for the happiness of those who are around them. And Mataji used to remind the disciples of Papa and say, "He laughs and he jokes with you, and he has fun with you, and you see him as an ordinary being. But I can tell you he is not. He is the universal Godhead. And for you not to see it is to be a blind man. And you missed that opportunity." Mother came, and she came with her eyes wide open. She struggled with Papa, because that's the nature of the ego. It likes to struggle on the other end of the line. But she was a willing participant in the dance. And sometimes it was difficult for her. Sometimes she saw Papa playing the role of the devil, and as the opposing force, she had not heard about many of the experiences that she went through. Now we know through the Christian symbology, the crown of thorns, the sacred heart, where Jesus is pictured with a beautiful red heart right in the center of his chest. And around that heart is the crown of thorns. And this represents the first stage in the mystical crucifixion. It is the opening up of the heart center. And at first, when the heart center first opens up, we feel its grace, and the love flows through our own heart. And we feel the divine light flowing through our own heart. But then the little bumps comes along in the road, and it reminds us of things from the past. And things that people say and do, they hurt our feelings. They make us doubt the divine love that had been flowing through our heart. So, in an attempt to save ourselves, to protect ourselves, we close the heart. It's a terrible thing that happens because we ourselves are the first recipients of that door of the heart that Master had written about in his beautiful song, "Door of My Heart." And so when the door of the heart opens, we feel that love, but then we close it. Then we have to work to open it back up. But the amazing thing is this, is that we can have such a tremendous spirit experience in God. We can have all the love, we can have all the joy, we can have all the bliss, and then that door closes down because we ourselves close it, consciously or unconsciously. And then it's as if it never existed. it never was. And we can wander back off into ignorance again and think, oh, that was such a dream that I had one time. And maybe it was a pleasant dream, but it's something that's in the past now. And it's the most mysterious thing, how we can awaken to God and then go to sleep so quickly. Papa was terrified of going to sleep itself during his sadhana days because he didn't want to forget. He didn't want to slip into an unconscious state at all. So he kept himself awake, chanting God's name continuously. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And through that he felt the power of bliss and the power of life. And he was overcoming all the old ghosts. You see, when he started this path, he was afraid of snakes. He was afraid of ghosts and haunted mansions and many things. But through the power of the name, he got to where he was standing in a cave, and when he came to consciousness, there was a snake, a cobra, wrapped around his leg, and it was licking his toes. Can you imagine such a thing? What would you do if you opened your eyes and had such an experience? You might scream, you might yell, you might go into a panic. Papa opened his eyes. Now remember, in the past, he had a fear of snakes. He saw Ram there. He saw his infinite beloved wrapped around his leg, kissing and licking his toes. And gradually the snake unwound itself and went its own way. He went into a place that was supposed to be hunted, and he deliberately placed himself there and kept chanting the name all night long, and some mysterious events happened all through the night, sounds and sights and things like that. And yet he marveled at the fact that he exhibited no fear. No fear. His body went through many things. His feet were lacerated. His body was emaciated. Now, we could only imagine that if we went through such things, we might entertain a lot of fear. What will happen to me? Papa had no medical plan. What was going to happen? He threw himself entirely upon the grace of Ram. He was fearless, and he would write about that. And you would think, oh, well, maybe he didn't think that much about it. I think he marveled at it, that he had absolutely no fear. Because these are things that would have been fearful to him in the past. And so he led his life in this way. Now, we don't have to leave hearth and home in order to have God remembrance. In fact, Papa generally did not recommend it. Fight the war from the fortress, Ramakrishna used to say. Fight the war from the fortress, meaning the family home. Stay where you're at, but chant God's name. Think of his attributes. Serve him in all that you meet. Love him in all that you know. Let your doorway of your heart open. Let the sepulcher, the tomb within your heart, open up. Let all the old ghosts of limitation and fear and anger and rage and whatever else may be residing within that tomb. Let the stone roll back and free all of those old dead spirits. Free them into the light, not to take on new incarnation, but to release them once and for all, that they will no longer influence your life. Swami Satchidananda oftentimes ascribed that when somebody had a slip or a fall, it's because they did not have proper intensity of sadhana. And I think this is very true. We let it slip. We get a little lackadaisical. We let our thoughts wander. To chant the name of God always is such a simple remedy. And yet, it's not easy to put into practice because the mind likes to wander. So he put it to a little tune. And he sang it over and over and over again. And it purified his mind, the all-powerful name of God. And Mother taught us that name and taught us that chant. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So as we celebrate this week, the Maha Samadhi. Maha Samadhi is the great samadhi, the great emergence of the soul into God. It's when the soul gives up this body consciously, has achieved that sense of self-mastery, and merges into the divine light. We imagine that that means going someplace different. But for the spiritually realized master, there is no place to go that is not here. Master wrote a poem that when he is gone from body, look for him in the flowers, and you will see him smiling back at you through the flowers. Feel him in the breeze. Spirit is omniscient. It is everywhere. It is we in our individual human ego that perceives it as being something other, something separate, something distant. Papa is here and now. Mother is here and now. Master is here and now. Attune your hearts to them, and you will know them. Not as remembrances, not as words from a book, from a pages of written long ago, but as living entities, consciousness that is everywhere present. Attune yourself to Papa. Love Papa. Love Mother. Love Master. We have such tremendous God-realized beings to focus upon. What God showed me one time, if an ego were to say something that Jesus said, I am the door, the ego is a closed door, a locked door. But for a realized soul, it is an open door. And as you approach the door or the image of a realized being, that door opens into omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence. And then you become that. You become transformed into the very substance that that divine being is. Now, some that would sound like sacrilege, but it's the truth. It is the truth. So let us take the time through this week to read Papa's words, to meditate with Papa, to attune the heart with Papa, to sing Om Shri Ram, to make it part and parcel of our being. To really honor the life of Papa means to emulate him. Emulate does not mean just copy. Emulate means go through the steps that he went through to realize God. And realize God yourself within your own being. And then you will merge into oneness with Papa, with the infinite, with the light, with the love, with the joy, with the everythingness that God is. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Sing it again and again and again until you are saturated with the divine essence. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Amen. Pronouns, I bow to the light within you.